This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
This is going to be a really cool show because the way this came about is really very interesting. I was at the bookstore. Yes, there are some bookstores still left. And I was looking through, you know, the different shelves in the books, and there was a book that just caught my eye. And it was called Angels in the ER by Dr. Robert Leslie. And I picked this book up and I was flipping through it. And this is the way they described it. Stories of the miraculous that remind us that hope turns emergencies into opportunities and each trial into a demonstration of God's grace. And so after I read that and I read a few more of the stories, I'm like, I have got to find out more about this man. So we have Dr. Robert Leslie with us. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Hey, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And it was really just sort of fortuitous that I came across this book when I was at the bookstore. That book was written in 2008, but since then you have written, you know, five more, and you have another one coming out in August of this year called Miracles in the ER. So how did this whole going from being an emergency room physician turn into now hand in hand with being an author?
Well, as you mentioned, I've been in emergency medicine I've done that for almost 25 years, and in busy ERs in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. And when you do that, you see a lot of people and you see a lot of different problems. And, I guess I've always been sort of an observer in a way. I've observed the human condition and the way we behave and the way we treat ourselves as well as the way we treat others. And it was never my intention to write a book, but I think I can tell a story. My mother always told me I was a storyteller. I'm not sure that was in a good way, but I can tell a story, I think, because I enjoy sharing the stories from the ER with people, with my friends and with family. And then I started writing them down. I was encouraged by somebody to do that. And I actually, around 2000, maybe earlier than that, I actually had a book written and put it together. And I had an agent in New York, and Irene Goodwin was her name. She was a great lady. And she had the book to with a large company, a large publishing company in New York, and it made it to the final committee that was going to decide on whether it was going to be published or not. She was very optimistic. She called me after that meeting and said, "Robert, I'm sorry. They don't believe that stories from the ER are going to be marketable." And so I put it on the shelf. 6 months later, the TV show ER came out. And I'm thinking, now what? But obviously there is interest in the ER. But I'm a practicing physician and stay busy, so that stayed on the shelf. And then in I think 2007, my wife said, "You know, you need to think about getting that in print one more time." And I said, "You know, you're right." But she said, "You know, I think you're going about it in the wrong way. You're telling stories. You need to tell why these stories are important to you. You need to come at it from a different angle. And if you don't know that angle, then you don't need to write it." Mm-hmm. But I knew what I wanted to do. And from the standpoint of sharing these stories and the ones that the people that it impacted me through their faith, and through the way they dealt with the things that life, sent their way.
Mm-hmm.
Once I did that, I looked at what I'd written, and I really started from scratch, but it wrote itself. I found an agent, a great fellow named Les Stobie, and within 3 or 4 weeks, he called me and said, "We have a publisher, Harvest House, who wants to publish this book." And you know, the Angels in the ER, I just wanted a couple of people in my family to get a copy of it. It ended up doing, you know, really well, and my publisher said, "What else you got?" And I said, 25 years worth, and one thing led to another, and we've written several books about the ER. One of the books, Angels and Heroes, my publisher asked if I'd be willing to look at stories from policemen, firemen, paramedics. And I said, well, those would not be my stories, but I would certainly talk to some of my friends and just see, you know, what that might look like. And that became an incredible project. And talking to policemen, firemen, paramedics, I'd sit down with them, take them out to breakfast, and we'd talk. And almost invariably, Lisa, they would call me back and say, Robert, we talked about some stories yesterday. I want to tell you something that I've never shared with anybody else.
Oh.
And now that's a heavy responsibility.
Yeah, it is.
Because I wanted to get it right. I wanted to make sure that I was being true to their story. So, in fact, I ran into one of the policemen yesterday at our clinic. And he, you know, I'd sat down with him several years ago, and we reminisced about things. And I just asked him, I said, now, John, I want to be sure that I got your stories correct. He said, absolutely. He said, you got them dead on, and I still read them, and we still circulate them around the department. So
fantastic.
I did okay with that.
Yeah, and I read, you know, most of Angels in the Hour, but there's Angels on Call, Angels and Heroes, Angels on the Night Shift, When You Need an Angel, and Miracles in the Hour that's coming out. The one thing I wanted to know, because people are like, okay, angels, in what sense? Are we, you know, they want to know, are you talking about from, you know, the ethereal spiritual world? Are you talking about, you know, someone is an angel on earth? Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what your thinking is when you were writing all of this, the different types of stories?
That's a great question. I'm asked that a lot, and I think I've been very fortunate. And I've got a great editor who keeps me from messing up too much with English and syntax and all that kind of stuff. So when people criticize what I've written, and thankfully there's not a whole lot, but they don't say this is poorly written and what's he thinking. It's the few people that have said, you know, I was looking for something mystical and didn't really find it. Now, I think there are some mystical stories in my books,
mm-hmm.
but when I talk about angels, and I do believe that God ministers to us in a lot of different ways, and I do think there are, I don't write about wings and halos and
sure.
and that kind of thing, but I do believe that God does speak to us through His Spirit, but also through other people. Clearly, I've seen that. He does minister to us through other people. And that's what I write about largely. It's the angels, the people who demonstrate selflessness, who demonstrate sacrifice, who go beyond the call of duty, who are there for people. And a lot of these are nurses. Not many are doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But they're family members, loved ones, friends. Those are the people and the circumstances that always impressed me, always grabbed my heart, and those are the people that I wanted to write about. Now, there are some things, especially in miracles in the ER, there's some stories that and some evidence of healing that I can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some of that in my books as well.
Yeah, well, I thought as I was, you know, looking through the book, this would be fantastic to be given to those who are studying in the medical field or those who are already in the medical field, because there was about your stories a humanness. And, you know, I imagine, you know, when you're trying to become a doctor anywhere in the medical field, you have to read a lot of dry, boring things. And I thought this book would be perfect. It gives you a little understanding of the personalities that, you know, and different things that can happen with patients and how things were dealt with. That's why I thought this would be fantastic if it were given out. Now, another reason that I was drawn to your book is I'm a two-time kidney transplant recipient and a cancer survivor, and have quite an extensive history with the hospital and ERs in general. And I'm always so grateful and amazed at those that tended to me. And you also spoke of family members and friends and all that. I call those warriors at home, because those that surround someone who is sick or in need are going through their emotional things as well as you. And as a patient, I was concerned with one thing, getting better. And as I grew up, I started understanding about those that are around me and their sacrifice and where they have to go emotionally and psychologically. And I think it never became more clear to me when I was able to meet up with a nurse who had actually jumped on a gurney and brought me back to life and saved me when I was just a child. And I got the chance to go out and have lunch with her and thank her. And my question to her and is to you, how do you get into that space where you are able to disconnect emotionally so that you can do what needs to be done?
Well, that's another great question too, Lisa. And the answer isn't it's difficult. The other part of the answer is that not everybody can do it. And especially in the ER, we do have nurses who come into the ER. We have physicians who come in the ER, and really at some point they can't handle it. They can't separate the clinical from the human, from the emotional. And you know, we're all affected. There's no question that especially with children, probably is universally affects us. And in the ER, whether it's a traumatic injury, a sudden death, whether it's a child that's had a malignancy and is not, is doing, poorly, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
those cases really do affect us. But you have to be able to focus. You have to be able to compartmentalize. And you have to be able to do your job.
Oh, that's a good word, compartmentalize. That's an excellent word. And one of the stories that I just want you to sort of revisit, because you said this is a story that actually stuck with you, was a time where you had to pronounce someone's death, and that when you walked into the room that his son was sitting in the corner and you shared something with him. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story?
Yes. I'm not sure what happens now with hospitalists. You got physicians who stay in the hospital all the time, but certainly in our hospital, if somebody expired upstairs, if it was 2 a.m, then sometimes their physician would call and say, "Robert, if you're not busy, could you go upstairs and pronounce my patient? He expired. We expected it," and so we would do that, and hopefully. The family had already gone home if they were there, because I didn't know these people. My job was to go up and see if this person indeed had expired. So this particular night, I walked out. The room was dimly lit. I think there was maybe a dim light over the bed, the head of the bed. And I walked in, and this gentleman was lying there in the bed. And I recognized him. I'd seen him, I think, a couple of weeks earlier when he came into the hospital with, and I've forgotten what it was. It may have been cancer or something, but he was not going to do well. But I walked over, and I checked him for breathing, listened for any heart tones, mm-hmm. any heart sounds, didn't hear anything. And then from the corner of the room, a voice spoke, and it was his son. And he was sitting there in the dark. And I'll have to admit, I'm not sure I'll put it in the story, but I'll have to admit now that, there was sort of a sinking feeling. Here's a family member. I don't know him from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know this patient. So I'm thinking, what's the quickest way to the door? I need to get back to the ER, which is interesting. How the Lord works in your heart at times when you don't expect it, at times when really you don't want it, because you got your own plans. But
mm-hmm.
this particular night, this gentleman and I talked, and I think what you're referring to is the story I told of my father, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about, we talked about his mother, we talked about his father, we talked about, again, passages, of living and dying and then communicating. And I think this is the story that I talked about. At that point, my father was gone. He had died several years earlier, and I had been going through a difficult time. And I shared with this man that I was going through a difficult time, and I happened to come across a letter that my father had written me when I was in medical school,
mm-hmm.
20 years earlier. And when I read that letter, and I'd read it just a few months before this story took place, it was as if my father was sitting right there with me, telling me the things that I needed to hear for that moment. I needed to hear them back when I was in medical school, but I needed to hear those things at that very moment. And what possessed me, I don't know why I picked up that letter, and I don't know, but it, clearly my father was speaking to me 20 years later.
Wow.
And we talked about those things, and it was, again, it was one of those moments where, you share with somebody. He was at a loss. He didn't, he was his father. He was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother was gone. But he needed somebody just to talk to him.
Yeah.
And fortunately, it was me.
And, yeah.
But,
and that's no accident. We know that was divinely guided.
Right.
Absolutely. And I want you to understand, with all of Dr. Leslie's books, they're not all heavy stories. There are some that are, you smile at, or some that are inspiring, but they are so well written because they're very, you can picture the scene. It's very descriptive. So that's what's really interesting about a lot of these different stories. And I can imagine working in this field for as long as you have, you've got to try and find the levity sometimes in what you're doing day to day, right?
Well, you have to, and I've never been accused of being too serious, I think. And what I would tell my staff and tell myself, and I tell my staff that we need to take what we do very seriously. We need to be intentional about what we do. We need to take it seriously, but we should never take ourselves seriously. And, I practice that way. I try to live that way. The person before me, that patient sitting there or lying there, needs my best, and I'm going to give him or her my best, but I'm not going to take myself too seriously. I realize that I'm simply a vessel,
mm-hmm.
that, I've been given some skills. It's nothing that I've done, but and if I can help somebody, that's what I want to do. But I do, we see some funny things and peculiar things, and the human condition is sometimes pretty humorous.
Yeah, it was one of the funny stories that I like to tell. I truly believe it was humor that brought me through a lot of what I needed to get through. And there was one time I was rushed into the ER, and I have really tiny veins, and they were all blown because I just had my hip replaced again and, was all out of veins from IVs and whatnot. And this nurse came in, and he couldn't get it. And then another nurse came in and couldn't get it. And so I finally said, "Why don't you both stay here?" I said, "And whoever gets this in first, you'll win something." I don't know. I made it into a game. And the funny part was that the Red Wings were playing on the TV, and they both each took an arm and they tried, and all of a sudden one went in and the red alert went off because the Red Wings had scored a goal. And I was like, "Goal, you got it." And there was just a sense of, even though that was kind of painful and not what I wanted to go through, they were willing to sort of take my lead and go with it, and it turned into something that I'll never forget because they were willing to sort of play along. They weren't serious about it, like, "No, we have to get this." I really enjoyed when I would deal with the medical community, and like you said, what we're doing is serious. You don't have to be, serious about it. What do you love most about your job, about what you do?
Well, I think it may sound sort of trite, but to be able to do something that impacts somebody's life, to be able to help somebody, whether it's physical, sometimes it's emotional, But those are the rewarding moments that, and again, I don't, you know, I don't keep score. I don't, you know, I don't, what did you do today? Well, I did this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
But it, to make a difference in somebody's life, and now I'm, you know, I've been, you know, 25, 30 years now. There's enough people out there that, you know, that I either helped or got them angry or something. I will see people on a regular basis that take the time to thank me for something that I did 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa, what is interesting, I think Walmart, and this woman tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and she said, "Leslie, do you remember me?" Well, that's not going to go anywhere because I've seen so many people. I'm sure I remember something. And she said, and behind her stood this young man. He's about 6'5", weighed 250 pounds, just carved out of, you know, stone. She said, I brought my boy to the ER one Sunday morning with asthma, and he collapsed in the floor before I could get him back. And I remembered that, boom, clear as day. I remembered it. Mm-hmm. And he was about 4 or 5 years old, tugging away. I mean, I was, you know, on the other side of the room, and he had respiratory arrest. He mm-hmm. dropped to the floor and was dead. And I scooped him up and ran into the to our cardiac room, and we got him back.
Wow!
And sent him upstairs, you know, and he was admitted. And you can find out what happened to him, but I didn't remember what happened to him. I know we got him back. We intubated him and got him. He was
right. And here he was walking up to you.
That's him. He said, "This is my boy." And I mean, he was a high school football star. He had a scholarship to play ball at Clemson.
Oh my gosh!
But my mind went boom straight back to that Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the thing that's always, I mean, that is really it's not really a rush, but it is certainly you realize that you have made a difference. But some of the things, Lisa, that mean the most to me is when someone says, you know, you saw me 15, 20 years ago, whatever, or you saw my mother, and you said something to me, some word of encouragement, something that mm-hmm. I will never forget, and that it made a huge difference. And that's a wonderful feeling, but also it is a significant lesson. What are our opportunities? What are the things we're saying to people or not saying to people? And,
right.
And that's true. You don't have to be an ER doctor to do that. That's true for all of us, that,
mm-hmm.
that the Lord puts people in our path for a reason. And I read somewhere recently that the people that God puts in our path are our path.
Mm-hmm.
They are intentionally placed in front of us, and we either take the time to listen, to ask a couple of questions, or we don't. And those, you know, that's a long answer to your question.
No, that I totally understand what you're saying there, and I so appreciate all that you do. We do something right at the end here that just gives you three silly questions so people get to know a little bit more about you. So just go off of your first instinct, Robert, on what you want to say. Here's your first question.
Okay.
Blank makes me laugh uncontrollably.
Whose line is it anyway?
Ah, good answer. All right, here's the second one. Who was your favorite superhero growing up?
Actually, it was the old Mickey. It was Mighty Mouse.
Mighty Mouse. Yeah. Okay, and answer
that. That shows you how old I am.
That's all right. We won't tell anyone. And what otherworldly power do you wish you had?
Let's see. I wish I could remember people's names.
That is a good one, Robert. I love it. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. Don't forget, all of the link to Dr. Leslie's books are on empowerradio.com. Thanks, everyone, and thank you, Robert, for being with us.